Everybody, what's going on?
Yeah.
It's Monday, and
Yeah.
it's movie time.
Yeah. Your hair looks good.
Well, I actually washed it today.
Yeah, it looks
I know
good.
what you always tease me, but I wash it every other day.
Yeah. It looks better when it's fucking
He
dry out,
get he
actually.
gets all like,
Yeah,
I think
she's.
he thinks that I leave it for weeks at a time,
I
and
think
I'm
she's
like,
got, yeah,
no,
like.
I don't. I
Yeah,
wash it
good.
every other day, seriously.
This is Jen's natural hair.
Yeah,
That's not a wig.
this is all
That's
my
her
real
natural
hair,
hair.
baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Just so you guys know.
That's what my
She's
real
got
hair
good
looks
hair.
like. I have good hair. But I have to keep dyeing it, obviously,
Yeah.
because otherwise I get little gray roots. But you know what I mean. So,
Yep.
yeah.
Might have to trim it up a little bit, actually.
It is a little
Bangs are
bit.
getting a little long.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do look better with shorter bangs. But it's just, I don't
Yeah.
know. I just get lazy, and it's like I wear wigs all the time, and
Yeah.
you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm just like, oh, yeah, I gotta cut them in. It literally takes like 5 minutes, but I never do it. You
Yeah.
know what I mean?
All right,
So,
so this is a good, this is movie here. We watched it last night. And it's Live and Let Die.
Tom was in a James Bondish
Yeah.
kind of headspace.
So we wanted to see like a free James Bond movie, and a lot of the good ones were gone. You had to pay for them. So, but this one was on for free.
Yeah,
And
it's HBO Max, or I guess it's just called Max now, but
yeah.
they had like a smattering of the old ones and the new ones. I think they had Goldfinger, they had
Yeah.
The Spy Who Loved Me, and then they had like some the Daniel Craig ones,
Yeah.
and they had some other
Yeah.
ones too.
Now this one was Roger Moore's first movie.
Yes, this is from 1973.
73. And I call this one kind of like James Bond goes to the South and deals with black people. He finally meets black people. Yeah, that's it's kind of it's t this is not a good movie. All right, but it has a lot of strong James Bond tropes, and it's
Sure.
got some good characters in it that are kind of remembered and sometimes homaged in James Bond video games, like GoldenEye homage some of it has the voodoo priest.
Baron Samedi.
Yeah, he's I think he's the crisp and clean with no caffeine. Ah, he's that
Yeah,
guy
it's the
from back.
same. It's the same
Same
dude.
dude. Yeah, he's
Yeah.
got a fantastic voice. Does
Jeffrey Holder. Jeffrey Holder is that guy's name.
yeah, he
He's
doesn't
actually a
have
ballet dancer. He started out as a ballet dancer.
he does not have a big role in it, but he has a very memorable role in this movie.
He's great. I love him in
Yeah,
this.
it's good. And then the main bad guy in this is the dude who played Parker from Alien.
Yeah.
All right,
Yaphet
and
Kotto.
what's his name?
Yaphet Kotto is, I think,
Yaphet
is how you
Kotto's that
pronounce. I
name?
think it's Yaphet or
Yeah, he's
Yaphet.
good in anything he appears in. He was
He is.
also,
He's awesome. I love
yeah,
him.
he was also in Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was in the prison scene.
I forgot
I
about
think
that.
he gets killed during the
I
prison
mean, we
escape.
immediately recognize him. We're like,
Yeah,
hey, from
like I said,
Alien.
yeah, and he plays a guy who is running a very sophisticated high-tech drug cartel, and he has I it doesn't come out and say it, but it's got to be a branch of Spectre that he's in charge of. He's got his own island with like a real sophisticated underground base, and above his base, it's on an island kind of like Haiti. It
It's
doesn't I don't
supposed to be
It
Haiti,
never
but
really names it.
they couldn't shoot in Haiti because
Yeah.
of the whole Papa Doc Duvalier thing, which was going on at the time.
Yeah.
They actually shot it in Jamaica,
Okay.
is where they
And the
shot
way
it.
they got it set up is what he's trying to do is he's trying to use that island as a huge plantation to grow opium and make heroin. And he's going to flood the US heroin market to put all the other heroin dealers out of business. And it'll be just him, because he's going to give the heroin away for free, okay, and put the other cartels out of business, and then he'd be the sole surviving cartel,
When everyone's
and then
addicted.
when everybody's addicted, and then he was going to jack the price way up,
Right.
and fuck everybody over,
Little convoluted, but I guess that could probably work.
Now, this is happening on in an island like Haiti. It's never named.
It is. It's called
Did they call it
San
Haiti?
Monique.
San Monique?
San
Okay.
Monique
Okay.
is
It's a
what they called
small
it.
island off of Haiti. Is that what it is? Or is it a town?
They just say it's in the
It's in.
Caribbean.
Okay. All
Basically,
right.
like I said, it's technically supposed to be Haiti,
Yeah.
but they couldn't shoot it in Haiti and they didn't want to
So his
call it Haiti.
cartel's all black dudes, and some of them are African American, and that leads you into places like he was in New York and in
New
New
Orleans.
Orleans.
Yeah, he was
Okay.
in Harlem.
Right. Every black dude in this is a spy. He's like a secret agent.
Pretty much. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. He's either a secret agent for Spectre in this organization, or he's in the CIA.
Right.
So it does have...
Everybody's in on it.
Yeah, everybody's in on everybody. It. It is kind of cool. And it's in the 70s, so there's a lot of waka 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 fucking...
Well, yeah.
Wah-wah bars and fucking whammy pedals and shit on the guitar. Bell bottoms, fucking badass custom Cadillacs. They're just pimped out shit. Drop top fucking white Cadillacs. Instead of door handles, they got big Cadillac symbols that you open it up with.
And they legit, yeah. In this movie, Felix calls them pimpmobiles.
Pimpmobiles, yeah, pimpmobiles.
That's how he describes it, as a pimpmobile. Which I thought was very funny. That kind of like cracked me up. Somebody noted, I was watching a couple of the reviews of this, and somebody noted in one of the comments, they said, you know, like 90% of the cars in this are Chevy Impalas.
Yeah.
Like, so, especially in that, like, chase scene from the airport at the beginning.
Yeah. So, in this one, fucking Bond's kind of a fish out of water. He stands out everywhere he goes. All right. It's fucking funny. He's not in any kind of disguise. He's in a fucking secret agent suit. Right, dealing with pimps.
Excuse me,
fucking...
I'm a very famous secret agent, yeah. And could you guys please very kindly give me some information about
he goes
your
to...
operation here?
Yeah. The operation owns a chain of restaurants called Filet of Soul, but it's spelled S-O-U-L, like soul. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's pretty clever, actually.
And it's got hidden compartments and fucking trick walls where they can abduct you.
And then, like, one, like, goes down in the floor. Yeah. And so I was like, wow, there was some engineering went into this restaurant.
And there's a shit ton of stereotypes in it, man. Fucking, they were calling Bond a honky. fucking, there's all kinds of fucking, and the only thing that was missing is that no one called anyone else a jive turkey.
See, because
waiting for that shit. Man.
As soon as everyone was like, go out and waste this honky, which is funny because James Bond didn't know what that meant. What does wasting someone mean? Is that a nice thing? No, it's not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But,
what's a honky?
I was like, I'm here for when he calls somebody a jive turkey. Like, and I'm sadly that did not happen.
Should have happened, but it did.
It should have happened. It went kind of that. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Now, there's an occult angle to this.
Yeah.
Which
magic is real.
I like the occult angle.
I mean, kind of. They were kind of implying the magic was real.
Yeah. Well, there's two different kinds.
Right.
On the island where they were making the opium, making the heroin, the indigenous black people there believed in voodoo.
Yeah.
So the Spectre black people who ran the fucking cult, ran the drug operation, was constantly fomenting the belief in voodoo. And on the island you had like fucking scarecrows that had coconut heads with fucking cameras so they could watch you. They could even shoot you through one.
Yeah, they had guns too.
They had this like Disney animatronics where fucking the voodoo priest could pop up out of the cemetery ground and stand there. But it wasn't him. It was just an animatronic dummy. They could do it all over.
Yeah, it was like to make it look like
make voodoo. It look like he could bio-locate and do magic. They were doing human sacrifice. But
killing
underneath there, it was
kind
of like Disneyland, where most of it's underground and people running fucking cameras and machines and shit. And they had that going on. And then it leads you to New Orleans. And in New Orleans, there was another group of black Spectre agents that walked around like a wake, like a funeral procession. And they'd kill you on the street, and then the pallbearers would drop the casket on you and suck you in through the bottom, and then they'd walk off. Real slow, playing instruments and shit. It was hokey as shit.
One of them jazz funerals.
Yeah, hokey as shit, but it was funny, you know. Okay. And early 70s, right? I haven't seen a James Bond movie this old. All right, this is probably the oldest one I've seen.
Well, I've seen the Sean Connery one.
I haven't even seen any of the Sean Connery
ones. I thought I had seen this one, but when we watched it, I was like, I must have seen it. I either saw it when I was so young that I didn't remember anything about it, which I would have because voodoo, but Or I didn't see it. I thought I had seen this one, but maybe I didn't.
Now, the guy that's running the show, the dude who played Parker in Alien, he's the one running the drug operation for Spectre, I guess. He has like a Louisiana Cajun chick who is a virgin who could read tarot cards.
played by Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
And I think her first film role, I think she'd been on TV prior to this, but
yeah,
she was only real young. She was, I think she was only 22 or something.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because they keep implying she's from New Orleans, but she's definitely got a British accent. And I got Cajun cousins.
Well, Jane Seymour is British. None of them girls
have accents like that, okay?
No.
And she's reading. She sits in a damn throne and a fucking Mardi Gras outfit comes up, feathers and shit go on her, and she helps her read.
Pulls it down.
But anyway, her accuracy is like 100%. So the cartel leader uses her to fucking foretell the future to find out if it's operation.
Because she can apparently legitimately tell the future.
He's like, she's for real.
She's right every single time.
The rule is, though, she has to stay a virgin.
All right.
And Bond got on the island, of course, he cracks her.
Guess what happened?
And then once she does that, all of her fucking powers are gone.
And I will say,
Salamanca's like, did you touch that? Did you touch that? It's fucking awesome, man.
It's not Salamanca.
You
like,
fucked my fucking woman. And even though he was in love with her, he wasn't having sex with her because if he did, she'd lose her abilities.
I wasn't sure if the, and maybe I might have to watch it again. I wasn't sure if the implication was that Dr. Kananga. He's like the dictator of the island or whatever. Yeah, and he's also Mr. Big. Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
He's also Mr. Big, the drug, big, like, you know, big drug cartel in Harlem.
He has different aliases. When we first saw Mr. Big, I go, man, that's a white guy
in blackface.
In a black costume. I'm trying to bet he's going to pull that costume. It's going to be a white guy underneath there. He pulls it off, but it's not. It's another black guy. So I was like, oh, it's a black guy underneath the black face.
Underneath the black face.
Yeah, because it looked like a white guy.
It was a little weird.
It did look like a white guy in a black guy costume, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
He just had two different identities he was using. And I got to say, Kananga, that is the best part about this movie in terms of the character. Him and the voodoo doctor who dressed up
him
like
and like I love him and all the henchmen.
Yeah, the henchmen were
like
fun.
All the henchmen are good. Yeah. Like they have like all these. There's a lot of henchmen in this one. I mean, Kananga slash Mr. Big, who is the same person. Like I said, spoiler alert. It's 1973. Come on, get on the program.
Yeah.
But so he has the I think his, one of the I guess like the most significant henchman is Teehee. Who's like this constantly smiling guy, and he has like a hook hand. Not a great prosthetic, I'm gonna say, because it's very obviously it's long enough that his hand is in there. You know what I mean? But he has like a hook hand, and then he has Whisper, who's that kind of chubby guy that just talks like that all the time. Yeah. And then obviously you have Baron Samedi, who's like the voodoo guy, who it's implied is maybe supernatural. He just kind of laughs at shit. And like I said, he's the same guy. That actor's name is Jeffrey Holder. And he kind of got famous from his role in this movie. He was a ballet dancer prior to that. He was actually a principal dancer with the Metropolitan Opera Ballet. And then got into movies like in the late 50s. But I think because of the iconic, he's not in it a huge amount, but he made such a huge impression in this movie that then he became like the 7-Up pitch man.
Yeah.
If you guys are around like during the 70s when they had those 7-Up commercials with the guy in the big like wicker chair or whatever.
Yeah, big wicker chair, white suit, white hat.
That's the same dude.
Yeah.
He has a great voice. He has like such a distinctive voice.
Talking
like,
about how crisp and clean and no
like Tom recognized it immediately. Like as soon as he heard that guy talking, he said the 7-Up line. And I was like, holy shit, that's the same dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same dude.
They ran him for years as the 7-Up.
They did,
spokesperson. He was good, man. He's on a lot of 7-Up.
He did, yeah. Well, like I said, he's cool as fuck. And he looks cool as fuck in this movie, too.
Yeah,
like I said, it is kind of implied that he may actually be supernatural, but I'm not really sure. Because it's kind of like magic.
Death a couple times.
Because kind of magic is kind of real in this one, I kind of feel like.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
They do use it to manipulate people, though, too. That's part of the magic.
Yeah.
This movie is, and it has a lot of fucking stereotypes about fucking Southerners and shit. They had a fucking Cajun cop in there.
Oh, I'll get into why. I'll get into that, too.
Yeah, fucking there's all kinds of shit in there. And there's a boat chase that's a little bit too long, I think.
Yeah, it goes on, like, forever. It's like, it has some cool stunts and stuff. There's some cool stunts in this.
Yeah.
And there's some cool action sequences, especially the shit with the crocodiles. I like the stuff with the crocodiles, which I'll get into that in a little bit, too.
Overall, it's a very dated movie.
It's pretty goofy, I'm going to say.
It's pretty fucking goofy. Bond does some amazing shit in dress shoes and in a suit. And it's totally, like, out of character or out of place. He's, like, you know, down in the bayou in fucking Louisiana, you know, hot as fuck, and he's running around in that suit. And it's just running across the back of alligators in dress shoes and shit. It's just kind of funny. He never dresses for action. He's always dressed for working in an office, you know, or going to a nightclub, no matter what he's doing.
Well, I kind of...
He looks fucking corny.
Here's the thing. I kind of feel like... Because I hadn't seen... I either had never seen this or hadn't seen it since I was a kid. So I had kind of forgotten how goofy, like, a lot of the Roger Moore ones were. And like I said, this was his first one, you know, because they actually had wanted... They asked Sean Connery to come back. He had done Diamonds Are Forever in 1971. And then prior to that, he had quit. And that's why they did the one with George Lazenby, which was on Her Majesty's Secret Service. So they asked Sean Connery to do this one, and he was like, oh, hell no, I quit before, and I'm actually for real quitting this time, except he didn't, because he did never say never again, like, later on. But you know what I mean. So they weren't sure who they were going to pick. Now, for a while, the producers, and I thought this was kind of weird. I didn't actually know this. The producers were actually gunning for an American to play James Bond. Hmm. Like, I think they asked Clint Eastwood, like, they asked Burt Reynolds, and he was like, no, James Bond should be British. Yeah. No thanks.
You had Burt running around with a fucking Georgia accent.
Now, I will note, though, that Burt Reynolds would have fit right in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It would have totally gone.
Burt Reynolds is, I know why they did that. Burt Reynolds is the, he's Southern, all right? Born and bred, he lived as a kid a little bit up in Michigan, but he was a Southern action hero, all right? Smoking the Bandit, fucking Cannonball Run, but people forget about White Lightning and Gator. He was known, really, for White Lightning, which is a white exploitation flick. It was a Southern movie made for the South by the South. And fucking, I think it was, the production was based, I think, in Tennessee, Nashville. But that flick right there, Gator, we reviewed it. White Lightning.
We did both of them, I think.
It's a classic fucking action flick. It's good. And he is the Southern James Bond, in a way. Gator. His name is Gator McCluskey, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
The thing is, though, is he's not some out of SAS or fucking CIA or what's, you know fucking...
MI6.
No, that's for pussies. He's from prison, which is a lot more accurate for the South. He's been released from prison a little bit early. And the FBI have asked him to fucking go up against like a crooked cop who they think killed his brother. That's why they went to McCluskey, because he killed McCluskey's little brother. And that's where the adventure starts. He goes back. I think it was Mississippi, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I think it was in Mississippi or Louisiana. And he tries to bring in this bad cop, get him set up. But then there was a sequel to it called Gator that's pretty good. So I can see why they thought of him as maybe a possible James Bond. But no, when you know fucking James Bond movies and Burt Reynolds movies, no, it's just, he's too...
Yeah, I don't really get the idea of like why.
He's too Southern.
I get they were trying to expand the audience. Oh, let's get an American in there, but that seems like a dumb idea. It just seems like James Bond is like a very British character to me. So, you could do it, but I don't think it would be the same. But the thing about it, okay, so here's the thing. I'm kind of like, I feel like Live and Let Die is one of the Bond movies, and it's kind of an iconic one because it was Roger Moore's first one. And, I mean, Roger Moore was... I'm going to say he was fairly famous before this because he was on the TV show in the UK, The Saint. He played Simon Templar.
Yeah.
So he was kind of a known quantity. Now, the weird thing about it is that people were pissing and moaning about Sean Connery being however old he was, like at the time Diamonds Are Forever came out. But actually, Roger Moore was older than him. Like when this movie came out, he was 45. So he actually looks pretty good. He looks pretty young. So I was kind of surprised when I saw that he was 45. I'm not that surprised, but everybody aged like really a lot more back then. But, you know, but so he doesn't look... Oh, I thought he still looked pretty young in this. But I don't know. I kind of feel like the thing about it is that this is one of the Bond movies that how you feel about it is going to be like, what kind of Bond are you into? Like, if you like... the kind of old school, kind of cheesy, quippy, comedic relief kind of Bond, then this will be right up your alley, because there's a lot of comic relief in this, and he's just always making these really cringeworthy little quips and everything, and I was just kind of like, a couple times I was like, hurt. You know what I mean?
Another thing that's terrible about the movies, I've heard people say, oh, well, you know, the old Bond was just so sexist. No, that wasn't the problem. The problem with it was extremely juvenile.
Yeah.
Bond basically fucked any woman he saw. The minute he saw her.
Women, they wouldn't even, like, resist. No, they'd be, like, as soon as they saw him, like, the panties would fall off.
So it's kind of like how a 15-year-old boy imagines
what picking it's like up wishful is like. Fulfillment.
Very fucking wishful thinking, you know what I mean? And just women were never like that, you know?
No.
They were never like that. But they were in James Bond movies. And it's like, who's writing this dialogue? Now, it does get better. It does get better. Some people mentioned Moonraker. I saw Moonraker. I liked it. I thought that was a tight one. We also saw another one. We were watched it after this one. What was it called?
We started watching The Spy Who Loved
Me.
But we didn't finish it because I fell asleep.
Yeah, Spy Who Loved Me was a lot better than this one.
Well,
so they did get better.
Like I said, I kind of feel like, and I was watching a couple other kind of breakdowns of this from people that know a lot more about the James Bond series than me. And they said the thing about it was that Roger Moore, you know, this was a pretty decent introduction. Like I said, he wasn't a newbie. He, you know, he was on like a pretty big show and stuff before he was in this. So he was an established actor. But they said that the thing about it was that they were trying to write stuff, especially like in regards to women, the same way that they would have Sean Connery. And they're like, and for some reason, Sean Connery could pull it off, but Roger Moore really couldn't.
Yeah.
So it's like, so after a while, they kind of got on the wave of like what Roger Moore was bringing to the role and kind of wrote stuff that was more in line with his character rather than trying to be like Sean Connery. The thing about this one that was a little bit icky to me was that Jane Seymour's character, whose name is Solitaire, and she's she's the one with the tarot cards, the psychic. She like tells the future and everything for Kananga. And she's supposed to be a virgin because I guess that's her psychic abilities or you know, that's what they lead you to believe or whatever. Now, I will note that Bond essentially cons her into sex. I'm not saying that she's, like, unwilling, but she believes in the tarot cards. Like, the card of the lovers keeps... That's another thing. Like, the tarot cards in this, they take them completely literally. Even though if you read tarot cards, which...
That's not how
they read them. Like, they all mean something different. They're symbolic. Yeah. But they take them completely literally. So the lovers card keeps coming up, and so Bond's like, oh, that means we're gonna fuck, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing. And then... So, like, he finally kind of talks to her, and she's like, oh, well, I guess the cards say so I guess I have to. And then he kind of shows, and Tom totally called it, too. Yeah, he got a whole deck of just the lover's cards, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he stacked the deck.
He stacked the deck. So it's just like, so he's like, just pick a card, and whatever it says, we have to go along with it. And she's like, aw, shit, now we have to fuck. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, ha, ha, ha. The whole deck was that. I'm like, you motherfucker. And then, like,
are we still on?
What?
Okay, because my shit hung up.
Oh. Oh, shit.
Hmm.
What happened?
I don't know.
What happened?
Okay, it's back.
Oh, okay.
It's back. I guess. Let me see. It says that...
I mean, it's still... That's weird.
It's like... We might have lost our connection.
I don't know. My little square is gone.
If you guys can still hear us, go ahead and drop something in the comment section.
Yeah, Zach says, I see you guys. And he says, okay,
for some reason, it's just my device.
Okay, so it's just you.
Yeah.
Just you. So I was like, yeah, that shit was all funny. So it's just like, I wondered if...
Okay, no, it's all.
Okay, that's fine.
That's all.
All right, so, yeah, now where was I? I got, like, all distracted. So he kind of cons her into it. And then, if that wasn't bad enough, he essentially fucks her powers away.
Yeah. Yeah, he ruins her.
His dick sucked out all of her psychic powers. And the funny thing about it is that, well, it's not really funny, but it's like, so they're laying in bed afterward, and she's, like, talking about it, and the faces that he's making, like, she's over there talking about, man, what a bummer, and I wonder if my, like, powers are gone. And her powers are gone, so Kananga's gonna kill her. There's no reason for him to keep her around if she doesn't have psychic powers, because that's kind of her whole job. And so she's, like, kind of lamenting about that. And Roger Moore is just kind of, like, laying there going,
oh, well.
What the fuck is she talking about? Like, making these faces. And I was just like, what an asshole. So, and the thing about it, too, and she's not the only Bond girl in this one. Now, this is kind of interesting that I thought they were going to do. So, as I said, they made this movie. Now, this is based on an Ian Fleming book from 1954. From everything, I haven't read it, but from everything that I could determine, it's fairly accurate to the book. Now, they obviously made this because this was kind of the height of blaxploitation movies. You know, Shaft had come out and everything like that. So, they're like, what if James Bond, but blaxploitation? Which is a little bit unusual. I mean, usually James Bond villains, for example, are just these big kind of super villains with underground lairs and everything.
Usually European.
Which this guy has too, like, and they're going to take over the world. So drug trafficking is usually not something that they do in James Bond movies, so this was a little bit of a departure. And like I said, this does have a lot of very blaxploitation tropes in it. Like I said, there's pimp mobiles, people calling people honkies.
Yeah.
You know, it's all this kind of, nobody said Jive Turkey, but I was waiting for that, but they didn't.
Yeah, black CIA agent comes and saves Bond
from now,
the black people. That's awesome.
Yeah, and they have him, like, walking.
He's like, you should have never come down here.
They're walking into bars in Harlem.
Yeah, yeah,
and
you're
like,
walking into Harlem. Yeah, yeah.
Not even. Yeah. It's just, like, it's very funny.
He called it, though, because he fucking stuck out.
And he's just, like, and he seems completely clueless. And he's just, like.
Bob's clueless.
Which is kind of funny.
He did not know the black world.
I guess not.
Yes.
But the thing about it, so, what they did, so, as I said, Jane Seymour, I guess, is kind of, like, the main, like, solitaire. She's kind of the main Bond girl. But there's one prior to this, who is supposedly like another, she's supposedly an agent too, right? But isn't she like a double agent?
Which one?
Rosie. The first one he meets.
Oh yeah, the black chick
with the afro.
Yeah, yeah. I don't.
She had an afro wig.
Yeah,
when he first met
she
her.
Was CIA though, wasn't she?
Yeah, I thought she was, but then I thought she was working with the other.
Yeah, and then it turned out she was like a double agent.
Yeah, that's what I said. She's a double agent. Yeah. So her name's Rosie. Now. She's played by Gloria Hendry in this, who I think was a Playboy Bunny or Playmate or the Month or something like that. And now Rosie, who was also supposedly working for the CIA, but like I said, is kind of a double agent. Now, she was white in the book, but they thought it would be interesting to make her black in the movie. Now, what they were going to do initially was they were going to make Solitaire black. Now, right. Solitaire is white in the book, but in the movie, they wanted Diana Ross to play her.
Okay.
But then they were just kind of like, okay, well, we can't have James Bond and a black woman, like, in this, like, because it was the early 70s, and they're like, the interracial relationships were still kind of, like, you couldn't really show them on screen, especially, like, in some parts of the U.S., like, they wouldn't let them show them and stuff. So they're like, okay, so what we'll do is we'll keep Solitaire as a white woman, because she's, like, the main romantic interest, but we'll change the character of Rosie to a black woman, so we still have the... So we can still have him making out, because he totally does have sex with Rosie, too.
Yeah.
Like, before he meets Solitaire.
Then threatens to kill her.
And then threatens to kill her, too, because that's just how he rolls.
But I didn't buy it. I never really bought Roger Moore as James Bond, for the most part. I never really bought that he could kill you, that he would kill anybody. He seems very soft to me.
Yeah, and they show him, like, fighting dudes in this movie that are, like, twice his size. And he's, like, holding his own. I'm like, that does not look
and
like
he
that would happen.
He takes his shirt off, and he's a scarecrow, basically. I mean, he might be able to beat up Clint Eastwood, but a strong wind would blow Clint Eastwood over, you know. But, no, I don't know where... Yeah, standards were different in the 70s, but... How did he get that job? I don't know how he got that gig. There's just not an ounce of fight in that guy. He looks like a men's suit model.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. He looked like not even a brawny scholar. You know what I mean? Smaller than that. Just funny.
Phil asked, what kind of gadgets did Bond's car have at all? He didn't have his car in this one. And the only gadget he had, because Q is not in this one. This is one of the few, I think maybe Casino Royale didn't have Q in it. But this is, I think this may be the only Bond film that doesn't have. They have like one scene with Moneypenny at the beginning and M, and they bring him like, here's your gadget for the movie. And all it is literally like a Rolex watch.
Magnetic watch.
With a magnet on it. Oh, and it also turns into a buzzsaw at the end, even though they didn't establish that.
Yeah.
Because that's how he got out of the shark tank.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's strong enough to where it could pull a boat across the lake, Okay.
Like by its little metal or
thing. It didn't pull on you. It could just pull an object. That doesn't make any sense. If it's strong enough to pull an object that heavy, it would pull you towards it too. You could just sit there like,
yeah, we were like the whole time.
There's no physics.
Because there's a scene toward the end where he actually, because you know they introduced the magnetic watch at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like in the first, he pulls M's teaspoon. Like, yeah. Away from, like, ka-chunk, and he's like, look, it has a magnet, ooh. And it's just, I was watching a video earlier, because I said the same thing. I'm like, wow, it's a good thing. Didn't I say, like, it's a good thing he didn't have a pin in his hip or something? And I was watching another video earlier that said, wow, good thing he didn't have a pacemaker, and then it had, like, a thing of, like pulling out of his chest.
And then another thing that fucking Bond says that makes absolutely no difference, he says that the magnetic field is strong enough to even deflect a bullet. I was like, no, bullets are lead. Lead fucking... copper jacketed. There's no magnetic qualities to that. You know, let it go right through it. It's just fucking stupid. You know?
Well, another thing, too, is that, like, toward the end, when him and Solitaire are tied up, like, they're going to get dropped in the shark tank or whatever. Like, I feel like most James Bond movies end with someone getting dropped in a shark tank. But, so he's like, oh, I need the bullet thing or the gas cartridge from the shark gun.
Yeah, that's the best part.
And he's like, has his watch, so he's like, I'm going to pull this. And it's way over there on the table, like, next to one of the henchmen. And that, for some reason, was the only thing that was... I'm like, there was, like, a million metal things on that table. It's like, how did it know that was the one thing that you wanted? I'm not buying it.
Kanaga got the damn gas gun, the shark-killing gas gun.
This is possibly the stupidest villain death in all of James Bond.
Yeah. But what I liked it before, when he first got it, he's asking Bond, because I like this, you know, what is this exactly? And he says it's a fucking gas gun, an anti-shark gas gun type of deal. And he levels it at one of his henchmen. What was that guy's name? Do you remember? It wasn't Teehee. It was kind of this fat guy. Oh, Whisper.
Name was Whisper. Yeah.
This guy could only whisper.
Oh, yeah. And, I forgot about that part.
Yeah, and he's sitting on this big pleather couch, and he fucking levels it at him. He's like, hey, you going to shoot me? But he shoots the couch next to him, and it blows up. Like a big balloon, and then pops, and he was on it when it happened.
And he's like,
"And it
what?
Was a practical effect. It looked, it was funny. It was funny." And then
I was like, "Okay, that's funny."
It was funny, yeah. I was like, "God."
I don't really think of that when I think of a James Bond movie. I was like, "That looks like some that's some wacky shit right there."
It presages the death of Kananga. He eventually gets Bond takes one of the compressed air cartridges and sticks it in his mouth, and he does something. He pressed a button on it. Stuck it in his mouth. He was in the water. They were fighting a shark, and he blows up like a balloon.
Like a Macy's Day Parade
balloon. Rockets out of the water, and he was fucking round, man. And fucking, he blows up and he hits the ceiling. It was hilarious.
No blood or guts or anything. He just blows up like he was a literal balloon.
Yeah. It was fucking hilarious. Came out of there like a rocket.
And I'm like watching it, going, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Yeah, and I was going, "What kind of fucking movie?" And Bond goes, "She had a very inflated sense of himself."
And then I was like, I was like, "You're making
fucking
me
dumb."
So mad. Well, like I said, I'm kind of more okay. So what I was gonna say before was that it does seem like a lot of. This seems like one of those James Bond movies that you either really, really like it, like it's one of your favorites, or it's one of your least favorites. It's not; it never falls in the middle. It's either, oh, this is my favorite one ever, it's so much fun, or this is the worst fucking shit heap, like, ever produced. So there's really no in-between. But a lot of people really do seem to like this one. But like I said, oh, thank you very much, Zach. Apparently they wanted Michael Winner or Bill Friedkin, of all people, to direct this initially. Well, I'd be kind of interested to see that. I guess because of all the New York City stuff, since he did French Connection. Yeah, I mean, so that might have been interesting. And the thing about it is that most of it, a little bit of this is in New York, but, you know, and they did shoot some of it in Harlem until the Harlem gangs, until they ran out of protection money to pay them, and then they were like, get the fuck out, so they had to shoot it, like, in the Upper East Side or something. But, you know what I mean? New York in the 70s, you guys. But most of it was filmed in Jamaica and filmed in New Orleans, you know what I mean? So some of it was in New York. But yeah, so the thing about it is I kind of feel like a lot of people that grew up with James Bond, they kind of like the funny James Bond or like just the kind of quippy, like it was like, oh, it's all of his one-liners and, you know, all of his smarmy kind of comments like about women and stuff, like, which is fine, like, if you like that. I'm not really a fan of that, so it's like I don't know. I saw all of these when I was younger, and I guess it didn't really occur to me to be, because I hadn't seen the later ones. Like, I'm kind of more like, I kind of like more gritty Bond.
Yeah.
I don't really like the comic relief Bond.
I liked everything about this movie except James Bond. I didn't like anything.
I liked all the villains.
The villains were the best part. The rest of it is, this is a throwaway. For me, this is a throwaway James Bond movie. I didn't give a shit about it. But the bad guys were cool. They were interesting, at least. I thought
Bond
was boring.
Yeah, he was a little bit boring. Yeah. And like I said, he's like super smarmy. Another thing, too, like at the very beginning of this, like he literally, the first scene of him is him waking up in bed next to some random woman who never shows up again. Even though I've seen that actress before in a lot of things. But, so then there's this whole kind of comedy of errors where M and Moneypenny show up at his house at like 5:30 in the morning and just walk in, apparently. And, so he's trying to hide this woman for some reason.
Yeah, they never say why.
It's like he's a grown ass man. Like, why can't he just say, "Oh, that's my guest" or whatever? It's like not a big deal. So she has like
a little young. What are they trying to say?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, all of the women are in this are a little young. Like Solitaire was like half his age.
Yeah.
So, so there's that too. But so they give him, so Moneypenny gives him the magnetic watch. And he's like, yeah, cool. Like, after the teaspoon thing, like, after M and Moneypenny leave, literally the first thing he does is get his little side piece out of the closet and use it to take the back of her zipper down, like, the back of her dress.
It's just dumb. Dumb shit.
And he's just like, something about, like, personal magnetism and something. I'm like, woof.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what I mean? It's just so, see, this is why I'm not a big fan of comedies. Now, so, okay. So let's talk a little bit about the whole New Orleans segment.
Okay.
Because there's a whole segment of this that's in New Orleans. I don't even remember, like, the story of this, it's not super convoluted, but it does kind of go back and forth. You know, it's a James Bond movie, so it's a lot of locations. So, one thing that a lot of the cast and crew of this movie commented on when they were shooting in New Orleans specifically was they're like, wow, there was a lot of racism. Because much of the cast of this movie is black, and a lot of the crew were black as well. They always had, like, a lot of black stuntmen and stuff. And the thing about it, and I didn't even realize this was a thing, but they said at this time period, it was standard practice for stuntmen. They pretty much exclusively used white stuntmen, but they were in blackface if they were stunting a black actor. So the fact that they actually used black stuntmen for the black actors in this, and a lot of the cast and crew were black, they said, so the cops where they were shooting really did not like this. And threatened to not give them filming permits. So basically, they had to argue with them and all this other kind of shit. And then they were kind of like, look, we're just going to leave and take all our fucking money with us. And then we can just go shoot somewhere else if you're going to be that way.
Well, so look, New Orleans, I know New Orleans, all right? You just go there all the time. Fucking, you know, pretty every weekend when I lived in Mississippi on the Gulf Coast. I got cousins that are from New Orleans. Cajuns. Race was always an issue there, but that wasn't the main problem. The main problem is corruption. They are fucking extremely corrupt, including the police. All right. So this sounds like already what they wanted was money. They'll just come up with anything, probably. What would they care if the fucking stuntman was black?
I don't know. I mean, this was in the 70s, though. This is like way after you lived there.
It just sounds like they wouldn't care.
You didn't live there at the time. Yeah. So I'm just saying that's what all the cast and crew said. And that it was something that a lot of them commented on, like, individually.
But they said it's illegal?
No, they just said, if you don't fuck off, we're not going to give you the filming permits. They give them a lot, like, a hard time about giving them filming permits because of that. Now, the thing about it, too, was that, so after they finally were like, okay, fine, whatever, they thought it would be funny to add this sheriff character, Pepper, into the movie to kind of, like, make fun of them, because that was the kind of people they encountered.
Yeah.
And so there's a character in this who's, like, the comic relief of comic relief. What's his name? G.W. Pepper? J.W. Pepper?
He's basically Boss Hogg.
He's basically a Boss Hogg. And he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Now, some people, I was watching a thing earlier. There was a guy, he's young. He looked, like, real young. And he's done, like, all, and he dresses up, like, in a tuxedo, and he's doing, like, all, like, in-depth stuff of, like, all the James Bond movies. And I watched his take on this, and he said he fucking loved that character. He said he thought that shit was hilarious. And I guess a lot of people do. It is kind of funny, but it is very, very over the top. And you can tell that it's a parody of that kind of character. Like I said, kind of like, it's actually, like, way past Boss Hogg. Like, Boss Hogg was kind of restrained compared to this guy.
Just a crybaby, Coonass. We call Coonassé.
Yeah.
Which is French. Whore. Like, yeah. The Cajuns have a certain way, especially the old school ones, you know, they kind of had a certain way about themselves. He's just a crybaby and fucking ultra aggressive and funny. Funny. You know, Smokey and the Bandit. You know,
yeah.
What's his name? Jackie Gleason did a good version of a fucking.
And that's what this strongly reminded me of.
Yeah, 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 right, yeah.
Even though this came out before Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what Jackie Gleason was doing. But he's like, I'm going to tone that down a little bit.
I think Boss Hogg was actually modeled after fucking Jackie Gleason's character out of fucking Smokey and the Bandit. It wouldn't surprise me if Jackie Gleason saw this movie.
That's what I was going to say. Like,
based fucking Daddy. I just going to know him as Daddy because his son was with him. Hey, Daddy, you know, what was it? Sheriff Buford T. Justice. He probably fucking based that character on this one.
There's a lot of similarities.
Right.
Like I said, this one's like way over the top, and he has like chaw in his mouth like the whole time, and he's like always like sticking his tongue out, like licking his lips and stuff.
Yeah,
and it's just like it is. Like I said, it is funny, but it's very juvenile. It's just very, very juvenile. Like I said, it kind of makes Smokey and the Bandit look kind of restrained.
Yeah.
I'm going to say
Smokey and the Bandit's great. We were talking about
Burt Reynolds. I love Smokey and the Bandit. Yeah. Unashamedly.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
It's another Southern movie by the South for the South. Some people are saying that it wasn't White Lightning that made Burt Reynolds famous, that it was Deliverance. Deliverance probably right on a national scale, because that movie went everywhere. But you know, growing up in the South, I don't remember anybody ever talking about Deliverance. And I think it's because what Deliverance was about. I don't think that was as well known a movie in the South.
It's a little bit of an uncomfortable movie
It's about gay rednecks.
I mean, that traumatized the movie a lot. Yeah, I said before on Friday that like I have a problem with watching rape scenes, and that is that's a real bad one.
So I don't.
I have a hard time watching.
Knowing the way Southerners were, my parents' generation, you know, especially my grandparents' generation, they would have liked that movie at all. They would have thought that was propaganda against them, but they would have liked White Lightning or Gator. And they loved Smokey and the Bandit. When I was a kid, that was all the rage. And then Cannonball Run, too. And then later, you're talking about, though, one of the best fucking Southern fucking movies with Burt Reynolds was Sharky's Machine, man. That's a really good one. That one?
Yeah, we reviewed that one, too.
And Malone was good, too. I liked that one. We played a retired hitman.
Zach says, hey, we were just talking about this. Like, I don't know if you were here yet, but said I always tune out from this movie during the boat chase. It goes on way too long. Yes, I agree. Now, I'm not disparaging the fine work of the stunt people in this, because the stunts are amazing. However, the speedboat chase in this goes on for approximately 40 million years. Yeah. It's so long. And, like, they keep repeating, like, the same gags. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like, hey, we're going through the swamp, and hey, I'm going over a piece of land, and oh no, I went through a wedding, and oh no, I just, you know what I mean? So it's just, I was like, okay, let's move it along. Yeah, I think it goes on for like 15 minutes, maybe. It seemed like a really long time. Because like we were watching it, I was just like, okay, this is cool and everything, but Jesus, when is this boat race going to be over? This boat chase, rather. So it was that. So now let's talk too about the crocodiles, because I did like the crocodile scene. So in New Orleans, they had this. That was in New Orleans, right? That bit? Wasn't that one of their processing plants or some shit like that? Now I can't remember. It doesn't matter. So they have like this little hut thing where I guess they're processing heroin, whatever the fuck they're doing. I don't know. It might be on the island. I don't remember. And then they have like this whole swamp around there that's filled with crocodiles and at least one alligator, because they do point out the differences in the snouts, which I thought was good because you can learn stuff from watching James Bond movie, right? So the funny thing about this is that when they first drive into the compound, there's a sign that says trespassers will be eaten. They go in there and then they leave James Bond out on this little piece of rock or some shit, and then like all of these crocodiles are like crawling up trying to get him, you know what I mean? And then he ends up getting away by essentially like stepping on this line of crocodiles like to get out of the thing. Now the fun fact about that, they actually wrote this whole sequence into the movie when they were down scouting locations in Jamaica. So I guess this was on the island. And they found this guy, and his real name was Ross Kananga. They liked him so much that they named the villain after him in this movie. And he owned this crocodile farm.
Okay.
And so they thought this was so cool. They're like, we got to write this into the movie. And the guy that's jumping over the crocodiles, that was him. That was Ross Kinnega, the guy that it took five takes.
Okay.
And if you look, because I saw some video of like some of the mess ups.
Yeah.
And the crocodile didn't eat his leg, but it kind of like got his pant leg, like on one of the takes. And I was just like, oh shit, that looked like it could have gone really badly. But yeah, so they got that guy. They just thought he was so cool when they were scouting locations. They're like, we need to write this whole shit into the movie. And he's like, jump. And he suggested, he's like, yeah, can we like jump on all the crocodiles? I don't know how they got all the crocodiles to like line up and roll like that, but they did. And he jumped on them. So it took like five takes, but they did it. And that's actually like a really, really good stunt. Because you can tell that somebody's actually doing that. It wasn't Roger Moore, obviously. I thought
they were in shallow water, but I guess they weren't.
I mean, I
guess you can run across the tops of their backs and then they don't sink that much if you're fast enough.
I don't know how deep the water was. But I liked that whole sequence because it just reminded me of being at the alligator farm in St. Augustine, like especially because the whole thing when Teehee comes out with the big barrel full of chicken wings or whatever, and like all the crocodiles hear it opening and are like, whoosh, and that's what the alligators do when they hear the wheelbarrow coming down with the shaved weasels or whatever it is the fucking they feed them, or like the raw chickens, and like all the alligators are like, whoosh, like coming down, and then it's like really freaky. There's like thousands of them. But yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool that they wrote that in there because of that. So yeah, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. Now, I will say this is an entertaining movie to watch. It was very entertaining. We had a good time.
Yeah.
And we were stone cold sober. And we were still, like, having a lot of good time, like, making fucking jokes about it and everything.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I'm not a big fan of the comedic element. And it's just, like, this has, like, a lot of, like, over-the-top comedy.
It's not a good James Bond movie. They had a lot better. They got a lot better.
The tone of it is just so strange. And, like, I didn't mind the whole James Bond meets blaxploitation thing.
That's the best part of the movie.
I liked the voodoo aspect. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that could have totally worked. I just think if they'd made it, like, serious. But some people like the funny shit in James Bond. I don't like it. Well, see, that's kind of the issue I have, too. Like, action movies, where it's just, like, you have to have, like, a quippy, like Arnold Schwarzenegger does it and all this. I hate that shit. I just hate it.
This movie would have been a lot better if it wasn't a James Bond movie. This movie, but a different character, other than James Bond. And I thought it would have been better.
Yeah. I kind of feel like, I don't know. I guess I always expect, because
could have been a Shaft movie.
I mean, this totally.
Yeah.
And I've seen other people point this out. They said, had Roger Moore not been not Roger Moore and had been a black actor, this could totally just been a regular blaxploitation movie.
Yeah, it'd have been a lot better.
And probably, probably would have been a lot better because it wouldn't have come with, like, the weight of expectations of, like, a James Bond movie, and you wouldn't have had to have all those tropes in it. Yeah. But that, it totally, I think it would have played better that way. I can see why they did it like that because blaxploitation was huge in 1973, and they were trying to, like, cash in on that, which, okay, fair enough, even though it doesn't really go, but I mean, I feel like you could have done a James Bond movie in that context had it been serious.
Yeah.
I think the problem arose when they tried to add all of this, like, funny shit.
Yeah.
Like the New Orleans sheriff and just, like, I don't know, just all the goofy shit that they added.
Yeah.
I didn't love it.
And it's the quality is not very good. The opening scenes with the chicks dancing and the skulls and the fire, it's very crude, and it's crude even for the 70s. It just seems very low budget. James Bond movies, you know, for me, I always associate them with, like, a high budget movie. It's going to show you exotic locations.
Yeah, they're going all over the world and, like, yachts. Yeah,
and that, you know, and that it's cutting edge with, you know, the theme song isn't bad, you know.
Although I'm kind of sick of that song.
Yeah, and it kind of stops and goes a lot.
I don't mind that song. I like the Beatles. I like Paul McCartney and all that kind of other kind of stuff. It's not very Bondy to me.
Yeah.
This was kind of the first time they'd used, like, a rock song as the theme. And a lot of people seemed to like it. And then George Martin, the Beatles producer, he did the score for it, which was unusual. You know what I mean? Like, normally, who's that guy, Barry, that normally does all the scores? So it was kind of different all around, which I get. It was a new actor. They were going to be like, okay, we're doing a new soft reboot or whatever the fuck they called it back then. So they're going to go in a slightly new direction, which fair enough. But I don't know. I don't know if it entirely worked. Like I said, I like the song. I don't like it as a James Bond theme.
Yeah.
To me, and the thing about it too, was that initially when they had that song, you know the scene where James Bond is in Filet of Soul and then he gets sucked down through the floor? Like the woman that's up there singing the song? That's the singer. She was supposed to sing it.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that would have worked better. But then Paul McCartney is like, no, bitch, I'm singing it.
Yeah,
right. And they were like, oh, okay, well, you're Sir Paul McCartney, so I guess we have to go along. I don't think he was Sir Paul
McCartney. Well, I'm just going to get back to what I said before. I liked the black characters and the black angle better than the James Bond angle. This movie would have been a better Shaft movie.
This would have been an excellent blaxploitation movie.
Yeah.
Not so much a James Bond movie.
It would have fit a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially a blaxploitation movie,
right.
But and James Bond.
Anything that was cool about this movie was centered around the bad guys.
They had
some fucking badass fucking pimp mobiles, custom fucking Cadillacs. One of them was fucking like, they did something to the headlights. I have to go see it again, and it looked like it was copper, like copper coated. I don't know if it was made out of pennies. Did you see what it was? Maybe just copper sheet metal, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
It looked really good. And it was the same designer who did them all, because the door handles to get in were all large Cadillac emblems that moved up to get in.
Which I was like, wow,
they look really good.
That's neat.
And they were drop tops, crunched with little windshields on the front. One of them, on the white one, and they were personal luxury cars. One of them, which is a two door fucking Cadillac luxury car, which that was all the rage in the '70s. They weren't four doors; they were two doors, like your personal luxury car, kind of like a high performance luxury car. Pretty neat.
Oh, also,
they had them pimped out. They look good.
I don't know
who made them, but whoever made them did a really good job. There showed about four of them.
Also, can we give a shout out to the guy that played like the cab driver?
Yeah,
I love that. Good. I loved that guy. But he shows up in New York at the cab, but because he's in on it too, I guess they never said what his name was. But he actually had a funny line in this that made me laugh, where James Bond like offered to give him like $20, like for which I guess that was a lot of money in 1973. Like give him $20, like for information or to take him someplace or whatever. And the cab driver says, because he's black, you know, and he says, "Man, for $20, I'll drive you to a Ku Klux Klan picnic or some shit like that."
Yeah.
and I cracked up.
Zach says the movie bothers him because it looks and feels really cheap, like a TV movie. Yeah.
And it doesn't have, and somebody was commenting, like, or somebody was on another review that I saw earlier, said this didn't have, like, the super widescreen aspect ratio that the earlier James Bond films have had. I don't know if that's true or not, but they said this had the slightly, it's not, you know, it's not, like, the TV thing, but it was, like, slightly narrower.
Yeah.
So it's, like, so that kind of gives it a little bit,
it doesn't look epic.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Like, even a lot of the stunts, while cool, you know, like the whole thing with the double-decker bus and the top coming off, and that's cool and everything, but it's just, like, it doesn't look like... I mean, I guess we're kind of spoiled because now, like, the Daniel Craig, James Bond and stuff like that looks fucking epic stunts, you know what I mean?
The Roger Moore movies got more epic, too.
It's just
this one. And I'm really surprised that Roger Moore stuck as James Bond. If this is his introductory film... He's forgettable in this. I just think he's just boring.
And some people said that they thought he got better later, but like I said, they weren't used to writing for him. They were used to writing for Sean Connery, and they were still trying to like have some holdover of that.
He's just really boring.
And he's just like a different... Yeah, he is very... And Zach pointed out, this is actually a good observation, Roger Moore as Bond never struck me as sexy. He always makes me think of your best friend in high school's cool dad.
No, he was a lot better in Spy Who Loved Me. He was a lot better in that one.
Yeah.
The best one I've seen of him that I can remember off the top of my head was Moonraker. And when I first saw Moonraker when it came out, I didn't like it as a kid. I saw it recently about a year ago, and I was like, oh, this is a badass flick. And it had a whole breakaway civilization cult, people that wanted to wipe out everyone on the planet so they could come back with their beautiful women and repopulate the Earth like the Garden of Eden and shit. It's like a... kind of a eugenicist type cult that you would have, something like out of Zardoz, you know. They were reading those kind of fucking books to inspire them. I thought Moonraker was good. It was definitely they were definitely trying to pick up on the Star Wars residue.
Well,
Star Wars was big, so they had to have something in space. So
James Bond in
Moonraker.
Space.
Right. Moonraker.
Which, James like Bond I said,
but it worked. It worked.
Yeah, I get it. And like I said, you know, you kind of have to. I mean, James Bond, he's such an iconic character. And I get that they were trying to, even with this movie, like I said, trying to, like, fit him into the context of the time. You know, blaxploitation is big. Let's do a James Bond blaxploitation film. Even, I mean, the book was kind of like that, too, even though the book came out in the 50s. It wasn't exactly the same, obviously. But, so they just kind of hyped up that angle because that's what was big. And they were trying to be, like, hep and cool, man, is, I guess. But, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if it entirely worked. Everything that I liked about this movie, like you said, was the blaxploitation stuff.
Yeah.
Had this just been a blaxploitation movie,
it'd have been a lot stronger.
It'd have been fucking rad.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like by making it a James Bond movie, you I was just kind of like, what are we doing with this?
It's kind of like a mashup of two different genres that didn't work well. The British spy genre and blaxploitation, it didn't mix them.
Yeah, it just, like I said,
it made the British element look boring compared to the blaxploitation. They should have, it should have been a Shaft movie. It should have been one of, if this was a Shaft instead of 007, this would have been definitely the best Shaft movie.
It'd been
the best Shaft movie.
Well, like I said, I'm into, like, I love voodoo movies, so I was just kind of like, well, that's why I like Scream, Blackula Scream, even better than the first Blackula, because of the voodoo element. So I love like, old-school voodoo movies, so I really like that element of it. Somebody asked earlier if they made any zombies in this. They did not. I kept waiting.
Well, I think the priest was supposed to be a zombie.
See, okay.
He was coming out of the crypts and everything with a skull.
So Baron Samedi, which is a real, I mean, he's a real, like, Loa, or he's a real, like, god in voodoo, right? So was he really supposed to be that? Was he really supposed to be a supernatural entity?
Maybe.
Or was he just supposed to be a guy that they were making the villagers think was him?
It's left vague.
Yeah.
You know?
Because he looks like he's still alive at the end, but I don't know if that's just...
Well, they were fooling people that he could bilocate.
Right.
Because the first one that they shot fell apart, and it was just a simulacrum. It was just a dummy of it.
Right.
It looked real good, though. It looked real. Like a Disney-level animatronic. But then another one came up, and they thought that was a fake, but it was actually him coming up out of the crypts. And I thought that was a cool angle. They should have used it more. But they didn't use it enough.
It needed more voodoo. Yeah. This needed more voodoo.
Yeah.
We all need more voodoo. More voodoo and less funny shit.
Right.
Less quipping, less there was, fat racist
there
sheriffs.
There was some stuff that they could have done to make it even more epic. What was his name? The guy who could pop up out of the graves?
Baron Samedi.
They should have had a lot more of him popping up in this.
Like I said, that's a real thing from voodoo. That's a real character.
And it could have been kind of, they do at the end of the movie show that he had survived somehow.
Yeah.
Everything that he went. So he may have been saying that he was a supernatural being.
Yeah, I thought that was the implication. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it.
Yeah.
Maybe they just thought, well, it was a cool character, so they're just going to do. And I have seen some people point out that it's like, well, maybe they didn't mean that he literally lived, but it was just like a metaphorical thing. Like Baron Samedi represents death, and it's just like death follows James Bond wherever he goes. Which I was like, okay, I get that. But they made the same comment about, because remember that there's that shot, because we mentioned it when we were watching the movie, where they all get on the boat and they're going back to wherever they're going, and there's a shot of a bunch of what looks like sharks, even though I think they're probably dolphins.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of shark fins like following the boat,
fins,
and then they don't comment on it.
Yeah, something got edited out.
And so we were like, well, is that foreshadowing because of the sharks later that maybe he's going to get fed to? Somebody else that I saw said, well, they just thought it was like a metaphorical thing, like, oh, danger is always following James Bond. I'm like, I don't know. That seems a little bit.
I think maybe something got edited out.
Yeah. But like I said, somebody pointed out in the comments, they're like, those are clearly not sharks, those are porpoises, because of the shape of the fins. But I don't know. It's just weird that they showed that. They made the point to show all of these little fins coming out, like, following the boat, but then, like, they didn't follow up on it. I don't know if that was just kind of like, they were just implying, oh, he's going back to the place where all the sharks are. I don't know. But it was this whole thing. So, Zach gave us another super chat. Thank you very much. said it also bugs me because this movie is kind of shot with that cheap TV movie type aesthetic. It distracts me a lot. There's really nothing aesthetically, visually interesting. No. There's a couple shots in this that are cool. Like, I think some of the like wide shots of the voodoo ceremonies are cool. The shots of Jane Seymour in the kind of Mardi Gras-ish throne thing that is also a costume at the same time. Yeah. Like, with that looks cool. The interiors of Filet of Soul with the red walls and stuff, that looks really cool.
Yeah, the secret base underneath the island look good.
There's cool shit in it, like some cool set design, but
it's just not shown enough. They didn't do enough with it.
This is not, like you said, it's not a real epic movie. No. It seems kind of small scale for a James Bond film.
Yeah, the cool shit that it did have, they didn't show you enough of it.
Yeah.
And then there was too much boat chasing and...
God, that went on forever.
Shit went on forever and ever. And they're like, yeah, okay, we've seen that stunt about five different times. And, you know, that power, those little speedboats could go across the land and get back in the water. Big fucking deal.
Oh, another fun fact. They accidentally broke a world record in what, like, they didn't mean to.
Yeah.
But, like, in one of those boat jumps, I think it was, like, 110 feet or something that. And then, like, later on, they were like, oh, hey, that was the longest one ever done. They're like, oh, really?
We didn't remember those boats as a kid. They were still around. They had them in the South. You could get real cheap speedboats back in the 70s.
Yeah.
They were real shallow, small. I think they were fiberglass, mostly. And you could get a pretty cheap outboard motor that had enough power, you could get that thing moving pretty fucking fast. Dudes are getting killed in them too. I remember though. They were like a rage for a while. Couldn't fit many people in them. Maybe four, maybe four.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys in the South would get those things and fucking tear ass around on them. It was kind of like a glorified jet ski. It's kind of how small they were. And I remember being, you know, a kid in the South, seeing those things running around on the lakes and in some of the rivers, and you'd have dudes fucking drinking, and then have the girlfriend up on the front of it, fucking trying to get a suntan and shit, semi-nude, you know. The 70s, man. People did shit out in the open. It was bizarre. That's how they drank a lot too. They just drank openly in the South in the 70s. If you were on the water, you were safe. There weren't any cops, so they were getting loaded out there and getting killed, drunk, drowning and shit.
That's just and I mean.
Yeah.
It's a boat. It's just like...
They were in their late teens, early 20s. They didn't, they didn't know any better. They lived real dangerously.
American Military 100 says, great review. Thank you. Jen, ever consider doing an episode on hyperstophilia, the phenomena of women who are attracted to and or marry serial killers? I had not, but that is a great fucking idea. So I wrote it down right here, like before. But yeah, so I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. I had been wanting to rewatch all of the old James Bond movies because we hadn't, you know, I hadn't seen them since I was a kid. And I remember not being a fan of the Roger Moore ones just because, I don't know, like I said, he never came across as, like, sexy or dangerous or anything. Like, he just always came across as, he's always completely, like, unflappable. And it's just kind of like, whatever's going on, no matter how dire it is, he's always just kind of like, well, that was a bit of a bother, wasn't it? You know what I mean? And it's like, in certain hands, that can be funny, because generally I do like humor where, like, all of this chaos is going on and people are, like, underreacting to it. Like, usually that's kind of funny to me. But for some reason, like, when Roger Moore does it, it just kind of pisses me off. And I don't know why.
Boomer chicks liked him, though. Yes. Like, it's like, that's like some dude that you're... That was like the Bond that your mom would like. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's so sexy.
He's like not sexy at all, though.
He's fake.
Like, he's handsome, I guess, in that sort of Hollywood-y way. But he's not, like I said, he's not sexy. He's not.
No.
He doesn't seem like he could whip your ass, or he doesn't seem like.
Doesn't seem dangerous.
Yeah, or mysterious, or anything like that. He just kind of seems like a smarmy. Rapey douche.
Yeah, in this movie, especially.
In this movie, and it's like I said, and he seems particularly rapey in this one because, I mean, he just every single woman. I know this is kind of like a trope in James Bond movies. Every single woman that like comes within 10 feet of him is just like immediately, oh, I can't help it. I'm just attracted to this. You know what I mean? And it's just that happens. So it's just kind of like, and
there's nothing really about him that would attract the woman. I don't think, you know.
And well, and the weird thing too is like he's a lot older than they are too. Yeah. Like it's like the chick that he's with at the beginning, like I said, looks young enough to be his daughter, and he doesn't look that old in this, but he is 45. Yeah. So, and she's easily in her 20s, and Jane Seymour was 22 when she was so easily young enough to be his daughter. And it's, so it's weird, and like I said, it just seemed really creepy to me that he essentially, like, conned her into having sex with him.
Well, it was a different scene back then, too. That might have, it might have been more common to have age differences like that. That might have actually been, because it was probably rampantly, a lot of hypergamy, I'm sure, you know, women trying to get married as soon as possible.
I guess, but like I said, it always like, it always just comes across as like, hey, I'm sleeping with my dad energy. Yeah. It just, that's what it always seemed like to me. CB said James Bond had sex with every woman he saw, but the one woman he wants to have sex with, Moneypenny, won't fuck him.
She's an old lady in this one.
She's not old.
She looks like an old lady. She's probably only 35. But
she actually, I don't think she was actually supposed to be in this one because she was in the last one and she asked for a pay increase and they were like, oh no, we're going to cut you out of this one. And she was like, come on, motherfucker. Yeah. And then they were like, okay, fine, but we're not, we're just going to pay you the same shit. And then she's only in like the first 5-10 minutes of this. And then it ended up that it only took 2 days to shoot her part. And they ended up having to pay her more anyway because it took longer to shoot the shit than if they had just given her the increase to start with.
She's not portrayed as a sexy chick in this.
Well, and the thing about it, and I read this too, is like the actress that plays Moneypenny and Roger Moore were like really good friends.
Yeah.
To like in real life. So they're like, so their dynamic here seems like more sibling-ish.
Yeah.
Where it seemed like in the older movies it was more flirty. But, you know, I guess because they were friends in real life, it kind of came across like that. Like they were buddies. So, but like I said, she's only in this for like 2 minutes, maybe, like at the very beginning. Yeah. Q is not in it at all. And like I said, there's no gadgets. It's just the watch.
Yeah.
And the watch, which is magnetic, and we've already talked about in many ways that that is kind of bullshit. But one way, and I didn't even realize this when I was watching it until like I saw somebody else bring it up. But they were just kind of like, you realize at the end when they're tied up over the shark tank, he uses the watch as like a little buzzsaw.
Yeah.
Nobody said it could do that.
No.
And it's like,
yeah.
Right? And just suddenly it can do that because of plot convenience. Oh, and how did he know that it could do that?
The pimps had gadgets.
That yeah, the villains had all kind of gadgets.
Pimpmobile had a damn dart gun in the side view mirror and a TV camera where you could aim it and you could pull up alongside a car and fucking send a dart into the driver's
Very
head.
Useful.
Yeah, yeah.
Very useful.
Yeah, and it looked pretty cool.
And on the island of San Monique, they had, like, all those coconut-headed scarecrows that had cameras and guns in the heads.
Yeah.
And didn't Baron Samedi also had that flute that doubled as a dart gun?
And a radio.
And a radio.
Yeah.
Because, and that was another thing, we were making jokes, it's like, everything in this movie, it's just like, it can't just be that thing. It has to be, like, three other things.
Yeah, it's like three or four other things. Yeah.
And it's like, nothing can just be like a radio that looks like a radio. It's like, no, it's a radio, but it looks like a teapot or something. It's like, it always had to look like something else. And I'm just like, that was very, very funny to me.
The Baron had a damn flute. And he could open it up like that and fucking use it as a radio. I mean, if it's kind of dumb, why not just have a fucking walkie-talkie?
That's what I mean. It's like, no one's looking at you anyway.
Nobody was looking at you. Yeah, right. Just have a walkie-talkie.
It's just that, well, that's, I think that's why I thought it was funny, because there's just, like, no reason for it.
Yeah.
Like, now, I could totally see the reason for having a thing, like, that you could shoot people from your car. Because, like I said, that's very useful. Yeah. I could think of many reasons, like, many times when I would use that.
So, we're dunking on this one, but it does have some good things about it, but they're not good things as a James Bond movie. It's a movie
fun.
That you watch.
It's a fun watch.
Just watch it, yeah.
If you like more funny, goofy, quippy Bond, then this is a fun one. And a lot of people do really like this one.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and if you like Roger Moore, you'd probably really dig it. Because it is like a fun watch. It's not boring. You know, there's a lot of cool shit in it. But it's not...
It's kind of a hokey gag.
It is pretty hokey.
Most of the movie.
It is pretty hokey.
The bad guys in this actually make the movie. You don't really need James Bond. Kadanga's good in it. Kananga. He's good in it.
Him and Baron Samedi are like the best parts of this.
Yeah.
Like I said, I loved all the voodoo shit.
Also, the tarot card reading chick. The black chick who was a double agent.
Yeah. She wasn't in it long.
It's a good It's a good blaxploitation spy movie. It's not a real good 007 movie, though.
Yeah, that's the only quibble that I have with it. Yeah. Had it just been sold as, like, a blaxploitation movie without James Bond in it, then it's awesome.
Yeah, and it's mostly, I don't think Bond's character's written real well. I don't think Rogers Moore is really into the role yet. He's not bringing much to the table. He's very generic and kind of stale through it. I thought he was very boring. He was the most boring part of the movie.
Yeah.
It was actually him. Well, everybody else is pretty interesting.
I think they made the right decision then, having everything be really colorful.
Yeah.
Except for him.
And the movie's not very epic, and it doesn't have a real big budget feel compared to the other Bond movies that I've seen.
Yeah, it's pretty low key.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I mean, other than a couple, like the boat chase and... there's kind of a chase at, like, a little airport with, like, some planes flying around. That's another kind of funny one, too, because James, like, commandeers this little... it's just, like, a little, you know, two-engine airplane or whatever. Or one-engine, whatever the fuck they call it. It's a little Piper Cub kind of shit. And so he gets in with this little old lady with these big fucking goggles on who's taking flying lessons or whatever. And he's flying it all over. And all the pimps... are, like, following him.
Yeah.
And they're crashing into the airplanes in the garage because, and I quote, "I can't find the brakes."
Yeah, that's right.
I'm like, aren't they where they normally are? Yeah. Or...
it's pretty lame. you do get to see pitmobiles smashing into fucking airplanes.
Into little airplanes.
Yeah. Cessnas and shit. Fucking up bad.
Yeah. I don't know why that line made me laugh. "I can't find the brakes," he yells. And I'm just kind of like...
everything is an excuse.
I was like, Leroy, that was the character's name. I was like, Leroy, the brakes are where they always are.
Right next to the accelerator.
Right next to the accelerator, just like always.
They just have to come up with fucking excuses.
I can't find the brakes.
Show shit.
And I think they were... I don't know if they wrote that because, like, the windshield was all smashed up. But I was like, the brakes aren't out there.
Yeah.
They're down by your foot. It's just, I don't... stop hitting the planes. Just stop, Leroy. Goddamn. So, yeah. So, like I said, we had a good time watching it, even sober. But it's not a great Bond movie.
It's a gag Bond movie.
Yeah. And maybe, like, I want to go back and watch some of the older ones with Sean Connery, because I can't remember...
they may have been this bad.
I can't remember if they were as goofy as this one. I kind of associate goofiness with the Roger Moore era.
Yeah.
But I could be misremembering it because
I haven't
seen the Sean Connery ones in a long time.
Like I said, I really liked Moonraker so far out of Roger Moore. I thought Moonraker was pretty
good. I remember not liking Moonraker even in the 80s when I saw it.
When I first saw it, I didn't like it.
I didn't like it at all.
I saw it recently and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Pretty good. It looks good.
Maybe divorced from the context where you're like, oh, an obvious Star Wars ripoff.
I think that's what it was. Next to Star Wars, it would be disappointing.
Well, next to Star Wars, pretty much anything is.
But no, it's Roger Moore was good in it, from what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he's older, but he seemed to like he had a little more gravitas, like he was more into the role by then.
Yeah, I guess he kind of gotten used to it. Now, View to a Kill was his last one, yeah.
I think View to the Kill is very fucking mediocre. Okay, I love
best thing about it is Christopher Walken and the theme song.
Yeah, and fucking, what's her name?
And Grace Jones.
Grace Jones. Jones as a ninja. Yeah. Remember that? She used a damn fly. Yeah. She used a fly pole with a fly on the end and poison dart fucking got the dude.
That's right.
Yeah. And then she jumps off the top of the Eiffel Tower fucking with a parachute or parasail or something.
If you've never seen the View to a Kill video by Duran Duran, I love that Duran Duran, because they were huge James Bond fans, so they went all in and made like a little mini James Bond movie in their own video, and it was so cute. I just thought that was so cute. They're like all in the Eiffel Tower and like fucking doing spy shit and everything. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that's adorable. It's adorable.
And Christopher Walken makes a good Bond villain, even though it's about computer chips, and they don't seem to know what computer chips actually do when they wrote the movie. Computer chips.
Nobody did back then.
Do something. Computers were magical. They administer drugs to race horses. That's what a computer does.
That's right. Because we watched that, and I was like, "What did they?
Why does you don't need a computer chip for that?
Could they not hire a consultant that could have told them?
They didn't really know what computer chips did.
No, we just wanted to do that. We don't want to hear the real thing.
They didn't. they weren't sure what a computer chip was, which is funny today, but the people that wrote that script didn't know what a computer chip did.
Well, I mean, the thing, one of the fun things about James Bond, I always thought, that a lot of people liked about it, was these just bizarre, like, convoluted schemes that these supervillains came up with. But that just seemed kind of dumb.
Yeah, and Christopher Walken and Grace Jones were like a cool couple to see them on screen with each other.
Yeah.
She was like his assassin, but he was also his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Or side piece. I think he had another girlfriend, too.
Grace Jones is cool as fuck.
Yeah, Grace Jones was actually
she was born cool as fuck.
In real life, she was a trip.
Yeah.
I never really liked fucking how Grace Jones was portrayed on talk shows and how they kind of goofed on her, like on Saturday Night Live and shit like that, as if she was from another planet and something really hyper weird.
Like, ooh, what a weirdo.
Oh, wow, what a weirdo. Oh, man, that's weird. You know, she's like a dude or something. No, she was
that's kind of that fucked
was a,
up.
She was a cool club chick.
Yeah.
From Haiti. No, from Jamaica, I think, right? I think she was from Jamaica.
I think she might have been Jamaican, yeah.
And she would have fit right in with a goth club. Fit, you know.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Nobody would have
instantly recognizable as a club girl, as a club chick. Yeah, and that's what she was. But
CB said Grace Jones beat up a talk show host in the UK. It's classic because she was on something.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Grace was not fucking shy about going to clubs, taking illicit substances, and not wearing clothes.
Yeah.
You know, she would go to a party.
She did not give a fuck.
No. She'd go to a party wearing a robe that you could see right through and just walk around like that. But she had the figure for it.
Yeah.
She was, you know.
People would only complain about that if you didn't look good.
If you didn't look good.
If you look good doing it, no one's going to say anything.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? And pretty pretty people can get away with
a
lot.
She was like a model. And she had a very popular build for the 80s, which was slender, real, real slender. Now, I always thought she was tall, but she wasn't. She's little. But it was just her
She always, like, looked the way shot her. She always looked very statuesque.
Yeah, you think she's, like, 6 feet tall.
Yeah, I always thought that, too. Just
no, she's, like 5'2 or something.
Yeah, she's, like, my height.
A little bitty, yeah.
Which is crazy. Yeah, but, I mean, the way she's proportioned, she always looked very statuesque, and she always looked really tall.
Had a real good head. She looked like she could have been a...
Yeah, she's got a great bone structure.
She kind of looked like that woman who played Bride of Frankenstein, just like an African version of the Bride of Frankenstein. That
Elsa Lanchester.
Yeah, that neck and her profile, she, real real model-looking, model-esque.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah.
Phantom asks... wasn't Caroline Monroe in Moonraker?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, wait. She's in Spy Who Loved Me, though.
Yeah. She's in Spy Who Loved Me.
Because we started watching that with the Roger
Moore.
She
looks great in it.
Yeah.
She's the bad guy's assassin.
Walking around in a bikini pretty much the whole movie. Well, at least as much of the movie as we watched.
With beautiful long hair, and she's flying a helicopter trying to machine gun bomb and shit, and he kills her with a rocket launched out of his fucking submarine car. Little Lotus.
Thought you were going to say something.
Yeah. And I was like, no, they blew her up. No, she's out of
Tom was very upset. Yeah. Like, don't kill Caroline Monroe. God,
I had a crush
it.
On Caroline Monroe since I was about 8.
Why did you blow her up?
Yeah. Saw her in the Sinbad movies. Let's go, oh, that's the woman for me. That and the fucking at Earth's Core and shit. Yeah. Thought that woman was gorgeous.
Don't let go.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just like, fucking Star Crash.
Space movie Star Crash. You run around in that fucking PVC fucking bikini and the boots and shit.
Oh my god. Phantom says I still have a crush on her.
Yeah, she's hot.
I don't know what she looks like nowadays.
She looks pretty good. She looks okay.
She looks pretty good still.
She's okay, yeah. She's gained some weight. She's older. That's from the last photos I've seen.
Haven't we all? But you know what I mean?
She's got to be 70s, you know. I think the last
photo. Yeah, she's got to be.
I remember seeing pictures of her like in her 50s and she's okay. You know, but people back then didn't hit the gym and didn't, you know, fucking take performance enhancing drugs, and with the exception of fucking Elvira, fucking what's her name,
Cassandra Peterson.
She's a woman's not really supposed to look like that at 75. She looks great, you know. It's not natural, but it can't be natural at 75. You know, natural at 75 is looking pretty bad.
Phantom says I gotta get that film Star Crash because Hasselhoff and Monroe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. David Hasselhoff is in there.
Yeah. Star Crash.
And fucking Marjo Gortner is in it, too.
Star Crash. Yeah, yeah. The Valkyrie chick, I think.
With his permy ass hair.
Oh, remember Battle Beyond the Stars? That had a boob girl in it who's like a Valkyrie.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, she's another one. I think she was a Hustler Honey or something for a while.
Yeah, there was a lot of that.
Yeah, there was a lot of that shit going. Star Wars B-movie rip-offs trying to appeal to teenage boys and erections.
Well, we're trying to appeal to all the erections out there in America. All the erections
on fucking 15-year-old boys, yeah.
I thought you were talking about Galaxy of Terror, that Ron Reformer one. Where that woman got raped
that
by
one too,
a
yeah.
giant
oh,
maggot.
Oh, man, fucking, yeah, we liked that
That
one.
Was kind of a messed up...
Yeah.
Now, I mean, in hindsight, we were, like, watching that recently. I think we reviewed it, like...
Yeah,
last year movie. Or something. It is. It's actually like much better than it has any right. But I think James Cameron did the art direction on it, right?
It's just kind of sandwiched in between a really fucking kind of lame story about a alien who's like a god type of a deal. Remember, played by Martin the Martian, that guy who played Martin the Martian.
Yeah, that's right.
The story itself's okay. It's just the story that it's. Like the prequel and the, what do you call it? Didn't you remember how that movie starts?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, the movie starts and ends with like this master in a robe.
Yeah.
And it turns out, I guess he's Death, but he's an alien too. And it's kind of like he's telling this story, if I remember.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. All I remember is the maggot rape. Aaron Moran being in it and Sid Haig being in it.
Yeah, Sid Haig does a great job. He only has like a couple lines. He goes, "The crystals. I live for the crystals." That's all he says.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Sid Haig was in Spider Baby too, if you haven't seen that one. That's an old black and white movie.
Yeah.
Graham says, "Diamonds Are Forever" in 71 started the comedy with Sean Connery. Yeah. Connery left in 67. That's right. That's what I was saying earlier. And George Lazenby in 69 did On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And then Sean was lured back for one more than in 83 again. Yeah, he did Never Say Never Again in 83.
I remember liking it.
We talked about that because we were watching the Oliver Harper.
I saw it in the movie theater.
Retrospective of Never Say Never Again. And they were like, they said, oh, they were making a big deal about getting Sean Connery back and like for this one movie. Even though the Roger Moore one, Octopussy, came out the same year, right? Yeah. And they were making a big deal about Sean Connery being 52.
Yeah.
Oh, he's too old to play Bond, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, we thought he looks good.
62.
He looked good in Never Say Never Again, but I would never have thought he was 52. Like, I'm almost 52.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, so it's funny, like, to see him, because I was like, he looks like an old man.
Yeah.
But he looks like a good, hot old man. But he still kind of looked like an old man. Yeah. If you had asked me in Never Say Never Again how old Sean Connery was, I would have said about 65.
Yeah.
52.
Yeah, people didn't age quite the same back then for some reason. I don't know what it was.
And the thing that's... And I mean, that's what we were saying about Roger Moore in this one. Yeah. I was actually... When the movie first started, and I knew that this was Roger Moore's first one, and this was 1973, when I was 1 year old. And I said, wow, I forgot how young... Roger Moore looked. Yeah. So he still looks pretty young in this movie. But then I found out later that when... I think in this movie he's 45.
Okay.
Because he was already a pretty established actor. Like I said, he'd been...
He looks pretty good for 45.
Yeah, like, so he was a good-looking 45. Yeah. Like, he didn't... I wouldn't have thought that he was 45 in that. I'm not surprised that he's 45, but I wouldn't have guessed. I would have thought late 30s.
He does not have an athletic build.
So. Well, no.
It's not like the kind of guy you would say, okay, you're going to be a secret agent. You're going to be out there fighting for your life and killing dudes barehanded if need be. That's not who you pick.
Yeah, that's kind of like... So
that's the problem.
So the one scene in Harlem where he gets taken out, where they go waste that honky, and he's just kind of like, oh, I wonder whatever that could mean, or whatever. So they take him out in this fucking bombed out, which was Harlem in the 70s, so it just looked like a bombed out fucking Eastern European city or whatever. So it's like it's all this rubble. So they take him out in this back alley, and then he's fighting these two dudes, and he gets the drop on them by, like, slamming, like, one of the, you know, the little staircases from the fire escape that comes down, and, like, slamming it into him, and somehow that knocks them out, like, forever. And I'm watching this sequence, and I'm like, I don't buy it.
No.
I don't buy that he would... Well, one, I don't buy that just this little metal staircase would knock two grown men out cold.
Right.
That would not happen. And I didn't buy that he would have the strength to, like... It just didn't look legit to me.
Yeah, at this fucking... During this era of theater, movies and television, it's still kind of a lot of vaudeville in it. Where it's yeah. kind of fight, it's almost kind of like dance moves.
And you're just kind of like expected to be like, okay, well, it's just TV.
Suspending your disbelief and shit.
Don't get
just
too
like
excited about
Captain
it.
Captain Kirk in the fucking television series, him and his fucking space karate. Right. Where he just goes, boom, dip, bum, 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 and he just crops.
And then the guy's like, and then he just like, and they fall on the floor and they're like knocked out forever.
Obviously didn't hit the guy, you know.
They didn't even try to make it look real.
They didn't even try to make it look real.
And I kind of feel like that happened a lot, like, in movies in the 70s. Because, like, people are just kind of like, ugh. And then the guy just, like, falls over. And I'm just like...
it's symbolic.
No. It's symbolic.
Yeah, it's symbolic.
I'm throwing a chi ball.
Right.
You know, I've taken the Dimbok. This is, like, this is my chi power. I'm just, like, putting it all out there, and I'm putting it in.
And, you know, I'm maybe the same age as many of y'all out there listening. We grew up watching that shit on television and in theaters evolve. You know what I mean? It started going into damn kung fu movies and martial arts. You weren't quite sure what was real. Could that really work? And they were convinced, they would try to convince you that, oh, yeah, you could actually do that
you can just
martial
go.
Arts, because it's you're focusing your chi, you're focusing it's all this power. So look, a guy that only weighs 125 pounds can fucking knock out this fucking 250 pound man. No, that's just a different
version.
Not in
real life.
That's really just a different version of Kirk's fucking space karate chop. It's notional.
I mean,
that's not how it really is.
If you set up a universe, where you have magic powers, you know, like a superhero type of universe.
Right.
Fine. I'll buy into it. But if this is supposed to be a real world with real ass people that are, you know, presumably they're real weights, then I'm not buying Roger Moore being able to kick the ass of someone who is a foot taller than him and outweighs him by at least 150 pounds.
If you want to know what
not
real
buying it.
Fighting between guys who can really fight, what it really looks like, just watch MMA. And that's kind of toned down a little bit. If those dudes wanted to kill each other, they probably could. But there's a lot of stuff that they won't do. You know, I mean, they're not trying to kill the guy. They're just trying to win the fight. So let me ask you this. Could Captain Kirk do well in MMA? No. We've shattered, get the fucking tore out the fucking frame.
Here's the thing.
Sorry.
I'm willing to give concessions for Spock.
Yeah.
Because he's an alien and they had a whole other thing going on.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. He was stronger, three times stronger than a human.
Right.
But the thing
but
is...
But Kirk was a human.
Right.
So
then ask yourself, look at Roger Moore in 1973 in this movie, and you ask me how well he would do in MMA. All right? He'd get his fucking ass kicked.
Well, we were watching this movie when he was fighting the gangsters like in Harlem, and I said, I could whip this dude's ass.
Yeah.
And I'm a tiny woman.
Yeah, so that's why I gotta give it to the newer James Bond with Daniel Craig. He's on gear, he's been training. You can look at Craig and you go, yeah, he might do okay in MMA.
Yeah, he looks like he could whip someone's ass.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I kind of feel like that's one thing I do, you know, okay. There's something to be said for, it's just a movie and you can suspend your disbelief and blah, blah, which I agree with that as long as you set up the ground rules for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I said, if this person has some other special power or if magic exists in this universe or something like that, then fine, I believe it. But if this is supposed to be grounded in reality and you look like you weigh about 120 pounds soaking wet and you're fighting a dude that's like twice your size and you're holding your own, if not kicking that dude's ass, I'm not buying it. I'm just not. And the way that they choreographed the fights back then was not that good either. And I kind of feel like even in this movie, which the thing about it, this movie did super well. In today's money, like in back then money, it cost about $7.5 million, which in today's money is about $48 million. In today's money, this brought in more than $1 billion.
Yeah.
So it was super successful.
Yeah.
Super successful.
Wow.
Which kind of blew my mind. I had to recheck the math.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I'm looking at it being like, that can't be right.
Damn.
No, it is right. $1.1 billion.
Well, competition
in today's money.
Competition wasn't that tough back then.
I guess. And like I said, people were more, I don't know. It's like people were more, and I don't know. I kind of feel like people are a lot more picky nowadays, which, brings its own set of issues. But in some ways, I think that's better because it's made the art better.
Yeah.
Because you can't, You can't half-ass it anymore. On shit. Like, in half-ass stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you really kind of have to be like, well, is this how that would really work out? And it's like, we have to... So they really have to think about how it would work out in real life. Because otherwise no one's going to buy it and everyone's going to bitch about it. And nobody wants everybody bitching about your shit. You know? So it's... Yeah.
Yeah.
The Phantom says the voodoo guy in this film's brother makes an appearance in Beetlejuice.
Hmm.
Really? Hmm. Which voodoo guy? The Baron guy? Baron Samedi, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, he was in a lot of stuff. Like, we immediately recognized him from the 7-Up commercials.
Yeah.
Because of the voice. But, like I said, he was a ballet dancer before that. And honestly, I kind of wish he'd been in this more.
Yeah. There wasn't enough.
Like I said, this movie needed more voodoo.
So I said, it could have done a lot more with that character.
It needed more voodoo. But yeah. I don't know. I didn't love it, but it was a fun watch.
Yeah.
So... I guess tonight we might finish watching The Spy Who Loved Me. We started watching it last night, and like I was too tired and I couldn't stay awake. But so I just kind of fell asleep.
Okay, then let's go ahead and shut it down.
Phantom says, I'm just joking, not his little brother.
I'm talking about the little shrunken head.
Man. Oh, okay, I gotcha. Yeah. I didn't see that, but I didn't see that far down. All right, so we're going to wrap it up and go do something else. And Wednesday night show, this should be a good one. I've been wanting to do this one for a while. We're doing a show about Benedict Arnold.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that was
that won handily.
Okay. It won by quite a large margin. So yeah, we're gonna do a show Wednesday night about Benedict Arnold. So we're gonna talk about that. So that should be kind of a fun show. Do talk about some American history, Revolutionary War kind of stuff. So hopefully you guys can join us for that. Thank you all for dropping by this evening. Thank you for your super chats. And we will see you guys again on Wednesday night. Good night.